So I also welcome you back, and for those of you who are just here for today, very warm welcome. Yesterday we spent, just kind of recapping a little bit, yesterday we spent the day really almost contextualizing these four qualities known as the Brahma-Viharas and the place that they play in the early teachings, and beginning to look at these really as pathways of awakening rather than kind of like, you know, second-class options. So really beginning to look at them as pathways of awakening. There are countless people, you know, well, probably not countless, but there are many people whose entire practice life is spent developing these qualities, you know, and I think often in Western meditation formats we get a slightly sort of odd view, you know, that, you know, metta might be visited, you know, like 45 minutes a day, and the rest of the day we're doing the kind of more real thing of insight meditation, which is, you know, kind of a distorted presentation of these pathways, you know. In the early years of my practice, you know, some of it was kind of boot camp practice, you know, we would spend, you know, days just suffering and then get rewarded with a half-hour metta period after 10 days of dukkha, you know, like, oh. It's never really been positioned, I think, in Western Dharma, really as pathways of awakening or really mine the rich field of insight that is available through the cultivation of these qualities of kindness, compassion, joy, and equanimity. And I think it's well worth, you know, really looking in our own minds if we have this sort of hierarchical relationship in around practices, you know. Okay, you know, metta's fine when I feel bad, or, you know, or when I'm really in trouble, you know, I'll do a little metta. Well, we're not actually going to be able to do a little metta, because this is a pathway of cultivation that requires really as much rigor and discipline as any other particular strand of meditative development. So yesterday we spent quite a bit of time contextualizing the Brahma-Viharas and, of course, giving a good deal of attention to the cultivation of metta, this boundless friendliness, this boundless befriending. Really, I think, respecting and acknowledging how it is, it's a foundational quality upon which all of the other Brahma-Viharas really flower and develop. You know, it is our first step, just as mindfulness, as I mentioned, turns towards the present moment. Metta really teaches us to befriend, to bring that affectionate curiosity, that affectionate engagement with what has been turned towards. And of course, that is the beginning of a dialogue, it's the beginning of a relationship, and it's turning the tide, most importantly. It's turning the tide. It is no longer swimming in the current of aversion, in the current of ill will. And the impulse of ill will, as we recognize it in our own lives, is very much to abandon what is present, to flee from, to turn away from, to disdain in one way or another. So turning that tide from the aversive impulse to that capacity to turn towards with a sense of care and with kindness is probably the most significant step we take in meditative development, because this is what allows for understanding. Understanding comes through relationship. This is where we practice understanding, is in within those relational capacities. So ended the day yesterday, again, with just beginning to examine this second of these qualities that we think of as compassion. But in the Pali, just reminding you, the anukampa karuna, the empathic quality of being able to listen and tremble in the face of the difficult. And the karuna, rooted in the word kriya, which is to act. what we do on the basis of that empathy, how we reach out, how we turn outwardly, not only to meet the distress that is before us, but equally to commit to uprooting the origins of distress. So that this quality of anukampa karuna, it requires, you know, a warm heart and a cool head. You know, if you think about the questions that we might ask of any moment of struggle, the insight question, the understanding question is, what is actually going on here? And the compassion question is, what does this need? You know, and I think those two questions are really helpful, really so important that they're wedded together. Because if we don't understand what is actually going on here in terms of how distress is coming into being, how it is impacting, if we don't understand what is going on here, then we actually are quite disabled in our capacity to offer what is needed. So what is going on here? What is needed? So we began to just look at that territory yesterday and to recognize that when we speak about compassion, which is almost an inadequate word for the anukampa karuna. You know, we're recognizing that this is not an emotion, it's not a feeling, it is this combination of empathy, and you consider empathy. You know, what does it really, what does empathy ask of you? Yeah. What is required inwardly for us to really develop that capacity for the heart to tremble in the face of the difficult? That's a question. It's your first question of the day. What does empathy need? What does empathy rest upon? Yeah.
It feels like opening. Opening to.
Opening to what's. The courage to be with what's difficult. I think empathy does require courage, yes. I think some stillness. Think about stillness. You know, how often when we're faced with the difficult, how that triggers, you know, so often so much narrative and interpretation, you know, and busyness. How important it is for the heart to tremble in the face of the difficult, that we can meet it with some inner stillness. You know, whether the difficulty is inwardly or the difficulty is outwardly, but our capacity to listen well, I think, means asks of us to be able to put down some of our filters. You know, some of our filters of reactivity and what should be happening. You know, so you can really, I think, begin to see how important it is that, you know, the Brahmaviharas hold, you know, deep threads of sati or mindfulness within them. You know, that, you know, if you're thinking about the Satipatthana Sutta, the kind of primary teaching of establishing mindfulness, and how the first instruction in that is breathing in, calming the formations. Breathing out, calming the formations. And the formations is an awkward translation of another word, of course, that we find. It's calming the sankharas. It's calming the patterns of agitation. Breathing in, calming the patterns of agitation. Breathing out, calming the patterns of agitation. And how this is actually our first step in beginning to cultivate a stillness, which is not an absence of movement, but an absence of reactivity. And in my own experience, empathy really asks for that calming of the reactivity so we can actually listen, so that we can actually be touched by, so that we can in turn touch. This is what we began to explore yesterday, and today we have really a lot of ground to cover, I have to say that. So if I end up talking faster, you'll know it's because I don't sort of want to leave equanimity as I'm walking out the door. Am I leaving equanimity? Good luck with equanimity. But we're not going to leave also behind the practice part of our day. So like yesterday, I'd really like us to have a sense of arriving, to begin our day with a sitting and a walking period, and to really, I think, really engage with that time well as a way of stepping back from the busyness of our lives, the fullness of our lives, and all of the things that might be, you know, calling for our attention in our life. And actually really answering that call to bring that sense of sensitivity and awareness inwardly. And to actually really acknowledge that this whole phrase of calming the formations or calming the patterns of agitation, that this is a verb, you know. It's not describing calm as a state. It's calming everything that is agitated through, as we talked so much about yesterday. Really, that mindfulness allows us to choose where we place our attention and the quality of that attention. And we learn not to fan the flames of agitation through not feeding it. We come to the body, the simplicity of that. So again, finding a posture of wakefulness. And really just sensing in your body if there are places of holding or tightness. Places where we carry and store agitation. And finding that marriage inwardly in our bodies of alertness, wakefulness, but also softness. Feeling the ground. Sense of groundedness. And mindful of the life of the body just now, the landscape of sensations arising, passing. The life of the mind just now, with all its thoughts and images. And in the midst of this, establishing mindfulness in the body breathing. And breathing in, calming all that is agitated. Breathing out, calming all that is agitated. So I'd like to suggest that we take 25 minutes for some walking meditation and begin in here at 10, and again a real encouragement to, you know, to find a walking path, to create a container within which to be mindful of the body in movement, mindful of the body interfacing with the world around you, touching and being touched by, and what it is to bring that sense of stillness, of listening to all of those moments of touching and being touched by. And then, as I said, if we come in here for 10 and we'll continue our reflection then.